Hey there, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight, Black Voices. I'm Brandis Friedman. On the show tonight, Larry Snelling moves one step closer to becoming Chicago's next top cop. Food pantries report a stark increase in food insecurity in Chicago. How organizers are providing support. If perfectionism is holding you back, we've got the perfect person to talk about it. The author of this month's Black Voices book club selection, Stop Waiting for Perfect.
The Southside Science Festival is a place where you can come and find your place in science through the University of Chicago.
And science shows off next weekend at the University of Chicago's Southside Science Festival. All that coming up, but our first story tonight, the man next in line to lead the Chicago Police Department faces city council members right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, is made possible in part by Fifth Third Bank and by the support of these donors.
At Fifth Third, we believe when diverse voices are heard and empowered, communities are made stronger, lives are made better, and the future holds greater promise for all. That's why we're proud to support Chicago Tonight Black Voices. Together, we can make a difference. Together, we can drive change.
Mayor Brandon Johnson's pick to lead the Chicago Police Department won the unanimous endorsement of the City Council's Police and Fire Committee this afternoon. Chief Larry Snelling is now one vote away from becoming the 64th superintendent of the Chicago Police Department. During the three-hour hearing, Snelling passionately praised the bravery of police officers and vowed to make their well-being his highest priority.
We don't spend enough time getting to know our officers. We want our officers to do a lot of things, but we can often stop and take a moment and think of how we're dealing with our officers. Now, I'm not saying that we do or we've done everything right. There are a lot of things that we can do better as a department. However, these are human beings. These are men and women.
And WTTW News reporter Heather Sharone joins us now with more. Heather, remind us who Larry Snelling is and why Mayor Johnson picked him to lead the police department.
Well, the 54-year-old native of Englewood has spent nearly 30 years with the Chicago Police Department, spending most of his career at the Chicago Police Department Training Academy and then becoming the leader of the Englewood Police Department and then the head of the Chicago Department's Counterterrorism Bureau. Mayor Johnson said he was the clear choice because of those roots in the department and in the city, and he also has been the department's go-to expert in cases of police misconduct because he is the expert on when Chicago police can and should use force, a very serious issue facing the department.
What sort of reception did he get from committee members today?
Across the political spectrum, he was welcomed as sort of the champion of the next chapter of the Chicago Police Department. He was praised by conservative alder people. He was praised by more progressive alder people, which isn't to say that he will have smooth sailing going forward once he takes the job, but for at least today, everybody was on board with his embrace of Mayor Brandon Johnson's promise to re-envision public safety in a more holistic way.
So Chicago, as we know, is under a federal court order designed to, you know, enforce department changes, the way it trains, supervises, disciplines officers. But we know that the department is only fully in compliance with 5% of that consent decree. Was Snelling asked about this?
He was. Only one alder person pressed him on that low rate of compliance, Northwest Side Alderman Samantha Nugent, who said, what are you going to do to sort of comply with those rules? And he didn't really give a new approach. He said, look, there are lots of things in the works, because even though the department might be only 5% fully compliant, it has made more progress along preliminary and secondary efforts. So he says there is more to come, but that has not been a focus in this month or so since he's been appointed by Johnson. Instead, he's focused on officer wellness and sort of reminding officers that he will be a top cop who has their backs.
And Heather, when is the full city council expected to vote on this appointment?
A special meeting called to consider just his confirmation will be held on Wednesday, but don't think there's going to be a big debate about it. This is going to be more of a coronation than a confirmation.
And I'm sure Heather Sharone will be keeping an eye on it for us that day. Heather Sharone, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brandis.
And you can read Heather's full story on our website. That's WTTW.com/news. And up next, food insecurity is on the rise. A look at the reasons why right after this. Many Chicagoans are struggling to make ends meet. With inflation on the rise and federal pandemic assistance expiring, food pantries and distributors say food insecurity across the city is spiking. Here's one Chicagoan as she picked up groceries from a partnership through Nourishing Hope and Reunited Chatham.
Food's expensive, and so I can't do that with my other bills. And then I have people living with me who are not employed. So hey, I do what I have to do.
Joining us now with more are Kenya Lambert, Chief Development Officer with Nourishing Hope, Aisha Jaco, Executive Director at Westside United, and Dion Dawson, founder of Dion's Chicago Dream. Thanks to all of you for joining us. Kenya and Dion, I want to start with the two of you. You both work in food distribution. What does the current need look like? Kenya, to you first, please.
Yes. So for Nourishing Hope, we are seeing an immense need across all 77 neighborhoods in Chicago. Our organization provides an equivalent of 4 million meals a year. And so for us, we have seen an increase of this year alone, just 30% of individuals, more families coming to our food pantry. And we are also seeing about 76% more families with children coming to the food pantry more than last year. So the rate of child poverty has increased, and our facts are showing that. Our data shows us, and also just being aware that families are immensely experiencing food insecurity at the moment.
Dion, what does it look for you? Listen,
it's staggering. When we look at what we're able to do with our programming at Dion Chicago Dream, we're able to see in our last mile delivery firsthand what it looks like. And in May, we cleared our wait list for our delivery program when we were at about 30,000 pounds. Since then, not only has that number matched what it was before we cleared it, but it's doubled since then. And so we've seen just from word of mouth without any type of sign-up process online, because we know those who lack consistent broadband access and the geriatric community would miss out. We've seen that 1,000 households have signed up in the last 2 months alone, just showing that need from word of mouth. And so
you're saying you cleared your wait list.
Absolutely.
And then the new wait list is twice as the size of the last one.
Yes. And 30% less time.
Okay. We're going to come back to that. Kenya, what do you believe is contributing to this increased need?
Oh, I will definitely say inflation, for sure. We are also experiencing the cuts and elimination of federal investments. So SNAP benefits, child tax credit, all of the housing, employment benefits that were extended through the American Rescue Act. We are also experiencing more migrants in the country right now, in particular in Chicago. And so that is attributing to the increase for us. And I will say for certain that our federal investments have deeply impacted families across the board. When you take away those investments, it just really devastates our community in particular.
Aisha Jaco, your team has studied the impact of food insecurity on health and wellness. What have you all found?
Sure. So food is a contributor to decreasing the life expectancy gap, which is what we look at in our work between 10 Westside communities and downtown. And so our measures in neighborhood and the built environment really point to food access as a key pillar in that. Food affordability and access and consumption to healthy food is critical. So over time, our work has looked at the pantry, food pantry network across our hospital partners. And most recently, we've been on the ground working in Garfield Park with organizers through the Garfield Park Community Council and Right to Wellness Collaborative on establishing a healthy food retail option that is driven by community input, working alongside corporate partners. And that was in response to Aldi's closing overnight almost 2 years ago in a community that has the lower life expectancy. That grocery store had senior centers in its proximity, about four to be exact. And so that overnight closure really lit a fire and an organizing arm in Garfield Park to not just protest Aldi's, but to find alternative measures and methods. So our work shows that food access, food insecurity, food consumption, lack of retail options in our communities are critical components. And as a convener, we've been on the ground to support those initiatives that need resources and connections to make that be a viable option.
And of course, your research, you say, as it is, you study the 10 West Side communities that you study compared to downtown. So what has your research told you then about the disparity between largely Black communities and those that are not?
Sure. So our research is also coming out of partners like McKinsey and Company that did a food retail analysis on the West Side that shows basically, like we know with other factors that exist in community, like housing stock, education stock, if we were to get on the bus and come from downtown into the West Side, you see a change in the grocer option, the change in the academic standing of the school, the housing stock. So that research just pulled out for us the proximity of fresh produce across West Sides. Communities like North Lawndale, East and West Garfield don't have viable options compared to other communities like Westtown, Belmont Cragin. So for us, that allowed us to position and think about how we can help organizers on the ground that are already in these spaces doing work to layer that with resources from the hospitals and other partners.
So Dion, we met you, it was in 2021. You were doing an outdoor Englewood food fridge. But since then, you've also launched Dream Vault. How does that system work?
So it's a network-enabled locker system where we've been able to partner with big box partners, and we put the locker inside that business, and we enroll up to 175 households within a 1 mile radius. So what we want to do is, of course, we're looking at food access, but also we want to look at the retail leakage in these neighborhoods, try to figure out ways that we can actually look at human behaviors and change human activity to get those people inside of these businesses that we want to, you know, keep those dollars in the neighborhood. And so with the first one launching inside the Yellow Banana in Save a Lot in Englewood, what we were able to do is tell them, hey, listen, you're not here to fight food insecurity, you're here to run a business. You know, allow us to do it. And what we were able to do is now we have that vault there. A household, once they're enrolled, when the vault is filled with our box of produce, they get their code, they have access to that locker all day. They're able to go there, get $30 worth of brand new fresh produce, and then they can stay in the store and spend their money on something else that can either help their meal and or something else their household may need.
So you mentioned the Save a Lot owned by Yellow Banana in Englewood.
Yes.
You know, there's been some controversy among the community members there. And since then, of course, we know that Mayor Johnson's team has, launched the possibility of a municipally owned grocery store. Aisha, do you think a model like that could work?
According to, you mentioned Englewood, partners like Aisha Butler and Rage, the idea is that if that option comes, community needs to be in the driver's seat around how to operationalize that and make that a viable option for residents. So I believe that if there is partnership, that could happen. When we think about the Aldi site in Garfield Park at Madison and Hamlin, due to protesting from community in partnership with other organizations, the city acquired that lot and created an RFQ process that now includes a grocer option. So I think that speaks to working with community hand on hand to help find solutions. This tends or seems to be an option that could work if community helps drive that.
Kenny Lambert, what do you think?
You know, I think that any access to food helps our neighbors across the city, right? So we're not opposed to that. I would encourage the administration to think about scale, right? When we think about policy changes and how we can increase SNAP benefits, right, without additional work conditions around it, when we think about what can we do in order to deal with the systemic racism that's within the communities, because we know that Black and brown communities are dealing with food insecurity three times as much as their white counterparts, right? So there's an equity that we're already seeing within communities, and I would encourage the Johnson administration to just think about scale.
Okay. We'll have to leave it there. My thanks to Kenny Lambert, Aisha Jaco, and Dion Dawson. Thanks to all of you for joining us. Up next, how to stop waiting for perfect. We explain right after this. Have you ever called yourself a perfectionist? It might sound like a good thing, but in practice, perfectionism can perform more like procrastination. And the author of this month's Black Voices Book Club selection says, waiting for perfect can prevent us from getting the credit and success we deserve. In her book, Stop Waiting for Perfect, Step Out of Your Comfort Zone and Into Your Power, L'Oreal Thompson Payton says, if the quest for perfection is keeping you from achieving your potential, it's time to get out of your own way. And L'Oreal Thompson Payton joins us now. It sounds kind of like the saying, don't let perfection be the enemy of just good.
Absolutely, which is something I had to learn firsthand, even in writing the book, right? It was this like masterclass of letting go of perfection, so.
The book itself was a lesson. When did you realize that, you know, the tendency towards perfectionism was creating a problem for yourself?
Like 2 years ago, when I lost my Peloton streak, my coveted streak. I'd spent 685 days, I think it was, when I forgot to log in and do a workout or meditation, and it just all came crashing down, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, who am I without this streak? And but thanks to therapy, it helped me realize, you know, like, you're still worthy, you're still a good person, you're still deserving of love, respect, and all of these good things. Like, you do not have to tie your self-worth into productivity, into a streak, into, you know, these goals and everything that I've been, like, working toward my whole life.
You're very specific about wanting to reach Black women with this book, and I think a lot of Black women know there are a lot of self-help books written by Black women out there for us. Why did you want to write this one?
Yeah, I think of the Toni Morrison quote where she said, if there's a book you want to read that hasn't been written yet, you have to write it. And I really took that to heart because there are a lot of books out there. And what I didn't see, though, was from a young Black woman's perspective, and young, you know, quotation marks, mid-30s, elder millennial. but I just wanted to write the book that I needed as someone who struggled with perfectionism, imposter syndrome, and self-doubt. I think of the Scandal quote, that scene where Papa Pope is telling Olivia, you have to work twice as good to get half as much, which is something that Black women have been told our entire lives, like, since we get out the womb. And so I was like, what can I do? What can I, like, offer up as this love letter, a virtual hug, a pocket-sized pep talk to help navigate those challenges and let us know that you're worthy without being perfect?
While writing the book, you had your first child.
Yes.
How did new parenthood influence your advice?
Yeah, I learned very quickly that perfectionism and parenting don't go together. Like, those two things just don't belong. And so it was really hard for me to let go of the plans and even being on time sometimes, you know, trying to get it now, especially a toddler, out the door in the mornings. And it was just like, okay, girl, you have to calm down, sit down, like, breathe through this. It's going to be okay. It's not the end of the world. And also, that's what I want to model for her, right? Because that's something I think generationally, like I said before, we've been taught and conditioned over and over again to be twice as good. And I want my daughter to be able to navigate the world and be this carefree Black girl. And so I have to show her how to be kind to herself and how to show herself self-compassion, and I need to do that by modeling it myself as well.
One of the techniques that you suggest for quieting those thoughts of self-doubt is to think about saying those negative thoughts to the 5-year-old version of yourself.
Yeah.
What was 5-year-old L'Oreal like? Did you keep a planner and a schedule? And
I was a lot freer back then, I feel like. Very in my head, very creative. I used to write these little stories in my notebook. I would talk about my first book, Dinosaurs in Outer Space, when I was 6, right? And just like these wild fantasies, and always had a book with me, was always reading and escaped into those worlds. And I, when I look at those pictures of myself when I'm younger, it's like I would never say the mean things that I say to me, like adult L'Oreal. And so why, or I rather wouldn't say it to my younger version. Like, why would I say it to my adult self? I wouldn't say it to my best friend, my sister, my daughter. And so we are our own worst critics. We're very harsh on ourselves. And so this book is really to help people learn to let go of that inner critic, that negative self-talk, and find a kinder way of being and existing in the world.
You also talk about feeling jealousy of others' achievements, and you say it's okay to feel those feelings. Why is that okay?
Yeah, I mean, it's been very taboo, and what we do by ignoring those feelings is it robs us of our humanity. Like, we are full people having a full human experience, and jealousy is part of that. And so I think it honestly can be used to your advantage. It can point you in the direction of something that perhaps you really are passionate about, that you want to achieve yourself, and maybe you didn't know it. And so instead of looking at it like, oh my gosh, I'm this bad person for being jealous, recognizing the feeling, greeting it, saying, hello, hi, how are you? What can this teach me? What can I learn from this experience? And then how do I move on from there instead of letting it get the best of you?
when you're feeling self-doubt, how do you affirm, you know, that you're actually good at the thing, right? Good at what you do without having, you know, that external validation?
Yeah, that's a really good question, but I do seek that.
Because what if you're not good at what you do?
And, right. And I think it's about having people around you who are honest with you, who care about you, who do want to see you succeed, and kind of bouncing ideas off of them, asking them what is it that you can work on or improve. And I was feeling this way very recently, even yesterday, on social media, looking at what everyone else is doing and getting distracted. And I went back to my Feel Goods folder where I have notes that I've collected over the years from people who've read my writing and talk about what it's meant to them and the impact that it's having. And that helps to redirect me and know that, okay, what I'm doing is important and it matters. It may not get all the awards and the accolades, but that's not the point. The point is to help people.
The Feel Goods folder.
Yes.
Tell me about this.
Yeah, it's literally a folder in my email. And I will save emails from people who respond to my newsletter. Or right now, there's been messages coming in about the book and people saying, thank you for writing this, for giving me permission to be imperfect, for inspiring me to go after my dreams. And I have to remind myself, like, this, that's the legacy I want to leave behind. That's the impact that I want to have on the world, especially for Black women and girls, to encourage them to push past that fear and that negative self-talk to go on and do amazing and incredible things. So those are the reminders that I save for myself on rainy days, those low self-esteem days when social media envy is getting the best of you, to remind me why I do what I do. And I encourage people in any industry to do that as well, to help them.
Good old social media. It's always always good to
a blessing
make
and a
you
curse.
Question yourself. It's got its purposes, though, obviously. Yeah. Obviously, you just finished a book, right? Mm-hmm. But what's next for L'Oreal Thompson Payton?
Yeah, full-time freelance writing. I recently joined back in that realm, and more writing, more books, hopefully. I would love to continue to do that, and speaking, promoting the book, and just spreading the word.
Spreading the word, whatever else you can get into. All right, that is where we'll have to leave it. Thanks so much for joining us, and congrats on the book, L'Oreal Thompson Payton.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Again, the book is called Stop Waiting for Perfect. Step out of your comfort zone and into your power. Up next, we preview a science festival on the South Side. Stay with us.
Coverage of science and technology on Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by Joel M. Friedman, president of the Alvin H. Baum Family Fund.
From a jellyfish meet and greet to a casual chat about the origins of the universe, organizers say there's going to be something for everyone at the Southside Science Festival. Hundreds of University of Chicago scientists will be taking over the campus, offering panels, experiments, and demonstrations to inspire the whole family to get their geek on.
We named it the Southside Science Festival for a reason, because we want to make sure that folks from the Southside come. The University of Chicago has been here for many, many years, but we're really trying to open our arms to get more folks to see themselves in this field, to see themselves as being welcome on campus and able to get involved with free programs that the university offers year round. So we want to make sure that folks from the Southside can get into these careers, because they are the careers of the future: biotech, life sciences, quantum. So when folks come, they can learn about internships that they can have in STEM. They can get connected to folks who are doing and practicing the work right now. It's actually an event where anyone can come. We want to reach the entire family. There will be panels for adults where we'll be talking about things like the future of clean water, things like quantum and AI. But it'll also be a lot of really great things for kids from the elementary level all the way up. They can also do really cool demonstrations. They can make ice cream that's made with liquid nitrogen. They can make and then end solar eclipses. They can interact with jellyfish and butterflies and other animals. So it'll be very fun, very hands-on, in a way to try to get especially Black and brown kids who've historically been locked out into STEM. There'll be over 300 scientists doing panels and other events where folks can see people in the field and see some people in some cases who look like them doing this work, and we'll be able to find ways to connect. We want you to come for the demos, but we want you to stay and get engaged. Science is around us every single day, and I think what's really neat about the Southside Science Festival is it's a place where you can figure out, what is my entry point to it? Sure, maybe you don't want to necessarily do quantum physics, but maybe you find chemistry super interesting and you just didn't really think of how one makes ice cream with certain materials as chemistry. So I think the Southside Science Festival is a place where you can come and find your place in science through the University of Chicago.
And the Southside Science Festival takes place Saturday, September 30th, starting at 11 a.m. You can find more details on our website. And that's our show for tonight. Be sure to check out our website, WTTW.com/news, for the very latest from WTTW News. And if you're watching us on Friday night, know that you can also catch Black Voices and Latino Voices on Saturdays beginning at 6 p.m. And reserve your spot at our next virtual Latino Voices community conversation with host Joanna Hernandez this Monday at noon. As we enter the primary season, we'll be discussing the impact of federal policies at a community level and what local leaders want you to know. Again, that's Monday at noon. To RSVP, visit WTTW.com/events. And we leave you tonight with a look at CPS students and their erupting volcanoes in honor of the Museum and Science and of Science and Industry's 90th anniversary. We have more on this explosive story on our website. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight Black Voices, I'm Brandis Friedman. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm whose attorneys embrace a culture of philanthropy and service by volunteering their time, expertise, and guidance to help others in the greater Chicago community.